very, very carefully touch that. Very carefully. Happy New Year again. Yeah, that's nice, isn't it? 2017 and everything that it's here to be. So Spirit is Calling is our theme for the month of January. Spirit is Calling. And today's talk is, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? So here I am, sitting on my meditation cushion, right? That's what we do. Sitting on my meditation cushion, meditating. Just waiting for nothing to happen. Just being, what? What is that thing that they tell us? Waiting for that still small voice. Waiting for that still small voice. What the heck does that even mean? Oh, there was something. Okay, there's something. Now, how can I tell if that's intuition or not? Is that intuition or is that my own thought coming up with things? Is that my own mind? How can I tell? How can I tell the difference? How can I trust? Trust. How can I trust anything outside myself? Ah, but wait a minute. God's not outside myself, is it? The outermost God and the innermost God, one God. Okay, so it's a call to my own deeper understanding of who I am, my own deeper awareness. Okay, so I'm listening for that part of myself that knows its own divinity, that knows of its divine nature, its connection with Source, its connection with oneness and all there is. So, what's that sound like? Anybody? And how will I recognize it when I hear it? And how do I tell it apart from my own ego mind that's just chattering away there in the background? Does any of this sound familiar? Because these are the most common questions we get in any of the foundational classes that we teach here at Vision. These are all the same familiar questions that we get. What am I listening for? How will I know? Who's talking anyway? These are the things we want resolved when we come to a philosophy like ours, right? And this is how Ernest Holmes described it. He said this, intuitive perception never tells you to do anything, never. It tells you to be something. And it doesn't even do that, but because it is something, it seems to. Do you see the difference? He goes on to say, people say, well, I had an intuition to buy a certain number of shares of DuPont or General Motors stock. And Ernest Holmes goes on to say, this is not intuition. This is a hunch. And it may or may not be true. I'd hate to have to follow anybody who had hunches in buying stock. You see, intuition is not of possession. It is not of becoming. It is of being. It is of essence. It is of feeling. It is of a conviction from the testimony of our interior awareness that so far overlaps, outshines, and dominates the intellect that the intellect is but a weak instrumentality for its office. Ah, that's intuition. Boom. I could just drop the mic and walk off right now. That's it. That's intuition. Our spiritual practice that quiets the mind that would boss us around, right? Our spiritual practice opens us to hear, but not with our ears. It opens us to feel, but not with our hands. It opens us to trust with our whole being, to to trust intuition, to trust that still small voice. And here's a little hint. You can't hear that still small voice if you never shut up long enough. If you never get quiet, if you stay busy, and we're a busy people, are we not? Holy moly, are we busy. We got tons of things to do. And if we don't get still long enough, you never develop that communion with the divine. You know, I hear many, many, many people tell me that they can't meditate because they can't sit still long enough. Not true, by the way. Not true, but it is a way for our egos to keep us from going deep. We are just too busy for that nonsense. And you know, if you sit still and you put your little, everybody's got an iPhone, everybody's got a smartphone, everybody's got some kind of timer, right? Just set the timer on your phone. Just even the stopwatch. And close your eyes and go within and take a breath. And then exhale. And then maybe do it again. Take a breath. And then notice there's like a little pause between the inhale and the exhale. And then exhale. And even if you do that twice, and then you look over at your stopwatch, you'll just be amazed at how many seconds have flown by. That's the beginning of your spiritual practice. That's it. That's the beginning of meditation. We can sit still and go quiet and go within. I don't care how hyper you are and how busy you are. What was it Mother Teresa said? I'm so busy I'll have to meditate twice as long this morning. It's true, right? Because what we know is that spirit does through us what needs getting done by us. Spirit does through us what needs getting done by us. So if we have a really, really busy day, we need to meditate twice as long. People say that they can't meditate because they fall asleep when they meditate. You know what? Another little handy hint for y'all. If you fall asleep when you meditate, you're not getting enough sleep. Simple as that. You're not getting enough sleep. Go to bed earlier. Sleep in a little. If you fall asleep when you're meditating, you're not getting enough sleep. Our ego does wonderful, funny things to keep us from going deep. Because, you know, here's the deal. The ego is nothing to obliterate and it's nothing to abolish. I don't care what the new thought writers say. You know, all those new thought people that are like, oh, I've transcended my ego. Bull stuff. You know, the ego is the individualized expression of us. Spirit made it itself. If we were supposed to be one big blob of humanity with no ego at all, we wouldn't be individualized expressions. We are here to be that person that only you can be and nobody else can be in the entire world. 7.5 billion of us. And spirit has need of 7.5 billion of us, or else we wouldn't be here. So the individualized part of us is necessary. The I am-ness of Patty is necessary, but it shouldn't be controlling everything. It should be going along for the ride. Your spiritual nature is our highest and best good, so we invite ego along with us. Our individualized expression seeks a greater outlet when we are aware and awake of our connection to Source. So we bring the mind in line. We bring our own personalized expression into alignment with all there is, into alignment with the spiritual presence that's within us. We invite it to come along. It's sort of like, you know, again, when you get a brand new puppy, right? You put the puppy on the paper, and then it wanders off, and then you put the puppy back on the paper. We do the same thing with our minds when we're doing spiritual practice. We're sitting on our cushion. We're waiting for nothing to happen. We're in meditation, and where does the mind go? Oh, let's see, I have dirty laundry I have to do later. I have to stop at Vons on the way home, and I have to, right? We start doing all that stuff. We start listing. We start, you know, our minds. So you take the mind, you put it back on the paper. Just like the puppy. You take the mind and you put it back on the paper. It's not a good mind or a bad mind. Just like it's not a good puppy or a bad puppy. It's just an untrained puppy. That's all. And we want to make it a trained puppy mind. So we put it, bring it back to the paper. And that's all we do. So if you think you're too busy for meditation, try it with a stopwatch. If you think you fall asleep, or if you do fall asleep, get more sleep. Get more sleep. Or change your meditation. We don't have to only sit on our meditation cushion with our eyes closed. Go on a walking meditation.
go on and do an open-eyed contemplative meditation with a candlelight. Do a chanting meditation where you sing or you chant. Do different kinds of meditation. If one doesn't work, another one will. And then as you become experienced in meditation, then maybe one will stop working. One will become, I don't know, routine or whatever. Then you add something new in. Keep changing it, but keep doing it. Keep doing it. Our spiritual practice takes us out of the stream of livingness and doingness and accomplishing and striving and struggling and grasping and toiling. It takes us out of all of that part of the living experience. And it places us in the peace, which is at the heart of God, which is at the center of our own being. And that's where we need to be. We need to go back home to that place where we follow our breath, where we know of our oneness. We know of our oneness with each other and with Source and with all of life everywhere. Takes us out of the dog eat dog. I hate that expression. Don't you hate that? Ugh. Dog eat dog world, right? Of limited resources and competition, and it places us in the garden where we are all along. We are there all along. Our spiritual practice reminds us of what is true about us. It elevates that intuition. It keeps us grounded in Source. It gets us to look at our life with new eyes and with trust in Spirit. Because intuition doesn't steer us wrong ever, ever. Ernest Holmes said this: intuition is not a product of the intellect, nor is it something which is developed in the process of our evolution. It is then a thing in itself. That which is instinct in the animal, blindly, unerringly, leading it to food, water, and shelter, becomes intuition in the human, consciously perceived. Instinct is intuition acting unconsciously. Intuition is instinct elevated to the point of self-awareness. They are identical. Intuition is omniscience acting omnipresently. Therefore, whether or not we believe it, it is ever present with us. You don't have to believe it, it's still there. Our connection to Source is still there. It can never be broken. It was never formed to begin with. It always was. It always was. Because we are an outpicturing of the one energy. We're an outpicturing of the one Source. So we're always connected. We must learn to rely on that inner wisdom more than we rely on the intellect. Because you know how facts are, foolish little things. They come and go. You know, I mean, we all knew the world was flat, right? At some point in human evolution, we all knew. The fact was, the world was flat. Now, us knowing the world was flat didn't make the world flat, did it? No, it was always round. It still was round. And it awaited our understanding of a round globe. Same thing with intuition. It doesn't care whether or not you believe it. It doesn't care whether or not you're even aware of it. It just is. And it awaits our understanding of it. And we must learn to rely on this inner wisdom, even more than we rely on the intellect. Because the intuition will never lead us astray. Our ego can. How many times have we followed our good ideas? Oh, I think I told you that story about my God idea, right? Did I tell you this? We were in the office over in La Mesa, and we had a huge desk. Do you remember the big reception desk? I don't know if anybody's been in the office a couple of years. We had a big, huge desk that was sort of up against a wall. And I was there by myself one morning, and I had this God idea. And it was pure intuition. It was gorgeous. And I needed to put a power strip, plug it into the wall, and there just seemed like there was just a little space between the wall and this, you know, 1,000-pound desk. And all I got was patience, just patience. And it was so intuitive, it was lovely. It was my God idea. Just patience. I'm going to wait for John Kirko and his son to come in because his son is like skinny, skinny, skinny. And he will go between the desk and the wall. And he will plug that thing in for me like that, 2 seconds. And that was my God idea, and that was brilliant, and that was intuitive. And then I kept doing my work, and then I sort of started running out of patience. And then my good idea, my God idea became my good idea. And what I did was I looked at that wall and that desk and I went, I bet you I could fit in there. And that's when it all went to hell. Oh my God. Okay, so I wedged myself between the wall and the desk. It was hilarious on some level. I mean, it's funny now. It wasn't funny back then. Anyway. So I was stuck there between the wall and the desk for quite some time. And then I thought, oh my God, you know, I'm gonna die here. I hope somebody comes. They're gonna find my dusty old bones in between the wall and the desk at some point. I really hope somebody comes to get me out of here. Just pull me by the feet and get me back out. And then the thought after that was, oh my God, I hope nobody comes. This is so embarrassing. I'd rather die. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. So you can see where the God idea, if you just would listen, was just the perfect solution. But no, I got in the way. I knew better. You know how like we all want to work for God, but only as advisors? You know, it really just doesn't work. Well, I did get out. I mean, here I am. I did get out, but you know, I looked really cute with a bunch of dust bunnies on. It was very dumb. Anyway. Yes, 5 minutes after I got it, Kirko walks through the door with his son. That's true. That is true. And that's exactly how it happened. When we listen to our intuition, it's never wrong. It doesn't ever steer us wrong. And if we have the patience and the understanding to just hear and listen and follow, you know, it's absolutely perfect. It is absolutely perfect. Spirit never, ever, ever leads us wrong. Ernest Holmes said this, could our eyes completely penetrate the spiritual realms? And could our imaginations rise by pure intuition to the comprehension of reality? We should, no doubt, perceive what the illumined have seen and sensed, that there is very little between us and heaven, and that this little is entirely bound up in our own concept. We are the only ones keeping ourselves from the garden. We are the only ones building the walls between the truth of our being and the littleness that we think of ourselves when we're in struggle and strife. You know, we are the ones who limit ourselves. We sometimes we can't tell the difference between fear and intuition. And that's because we don't sit on our cushion often enough. When we don't know the difference between fear and intuition, it is because we are not fluent in intuition. Okay? We're not fluent in that language. But we're fluent in fear because that's what we keep getting reinforced every single day. That's what comes out us from the voice of the world is fear. We're fluent in that. So then how do we understand the voice of intuition? We have to take the time. We have to take as much time on the cushion as we do in front of the TV or in front of the radio or listening on the or reading on the computer. How many hours do we spend doing that? And it listens to the voice of the world. So sure, when the voice of intuition comes up, we don't recognize it. We don't recognize it because we're not fluent in it, because we haven't spent enough time. You know, when we just dabble in our spiritual practice, we don't know what we're listening to. So we don't hear it to begin with, or we don't pay attention to it, or we don't know what it is. We think it's something else. There's a book that's part of the practitioner curriculum. You guys are going to laugh. 7,000 Ways to Listen. It's a book that was written by Mark Nebo. It's a new book in the practitioner curriculum. It's really not one of my favorite books, but that being said, it has some really good stuff in it. But what I loved was his inspiration for writing the book. He said that there are about 7,000 different modern living languages on the planet today. are about 7,000 ways to talk. So he said, so there must be 7,000 ways to listen. And how many of those ways do we develop? How many ways do we listen? And what is it we're listening to? Because if we're listening to the voice of the world, we're listening to fear. We're kind of listening to fear. And you know, I'm kind of done with that. Are you? I'm really done with being afraid, and I'm really done with people telling me to be afraid. I'm really done with reporters and with TV shows and news anchors telling me, not reporting on the news, but telling me what the news means and how afraid I should be. I'm just done. And I love the post. We had a post, I think, Vision on the Facebook post this morning had a quote that said, I want a faith so big that I don't have to worry anymore. A faith so big that I think I'm paraphrasing, but that's what we're talking about, relying on our intuition so much, so totally, that I don't have to worry anymore. I choose not to worry because the connection with Source is so great, it's so unshakable, it's so unbreakable that I know it all comes out all right. There is nothing to worry about. Intuition guides, right? As Ernest Holmes said, as beingness. Doesn't tell us what to do, doesn't tell us what to buy or where to go. It is our beingness. It is in the presence. It is the power that is within us. Fear seeks to protect us from something or someone outside of ourselves. Core concept one tells us there is nothing outside of ourselves. There's only God. There's only God in every single way it shows up. Ernest Holmes said this. He said, today, I know that intuition, which is the presence of the divine mind in me, guides me correctly. It sets me on the path of right action. It directs my footsteps. It counsels my mind. Today, I am aware that there is a light which dispels ignorance, fear, superstition, and doubt, and sets me safe and sane on the pathway of truth. This is our intention for this year. This is 2017. This is our commitment to our teaching, to our spiritual practice, to indulge ourselves in the truth of our being, to set that time aside, to go within, to develop a real rapport with that still small voice so that we know it when we hear it. Join me, right? Join me this year. Let's do this together. Thank you so much.